Spirit of the law, 9 days.
You should not cut your nails during this week. But Erev Shabbos Chazon, it's a midweek can. All right. What should I do? He brings Yitzchayim. So when there's Yitzchayim, he says, you're not supposed to, this is machlok supposed to give, just first of all, Mishnah Berurah. For the Mishnah Berurah, you're allowed to cut your nails until the week of where Tisha B'Av comes out, and that week is a question. Doesn't make clear, can you? This is some say you can, some say you can't, as far as I remember. Now, the truth is that Ben Chai is not allowed during the week of, and he, you know, he says it's not appropriate, but he says, if they're above the flesh of your hand, your fingers, you're allowed to.
What does that mean? They're like, if you put your hands like,
yeah, exactly. If they're there, you're allowed to cut them anytime. So okay. During the week of, why? He says, because this is the thing. I mean, this is what he does. He reserves the right. So he says, listen, the Yitzchayim says that the other side gets to get a draw from these nails. So don't leave them. When they go higher, it goes to the other side. Now, the truth is that what it comes out there is the big problem is people whose neshama are from a shorish kain. They're from a shorish kain. It means usually people who can work with their hands well, artistic type, or people who are very good with tools and things to this effect. They're not speaking people necessarily. That's not their great strength. Their strength more is with hands. That's worse. But either way, it says not gives the other side a grasp on.
What does that mean?
Well, there's the easy answer and the hard answer. The easy answer is I have no idea. That's easy, right? Very simple. I mean, you did too. So that's easy.
Rabbi Elgad gave a shear and he's saying something like, there are 10,000 demons on your left-hand side and 1,000 demons on your right, and they're hanging onto your nails that are extended.
Yeah, that's what it says.
It's
not the numbers.
So you're
that's what
like working with demons and God knows what else.
Okay,
I added the last line.
So the easy part, the easy stuff, the easy answer is we have no idea. It's a very deep concept. And what it really means, we don't know. On a simple level, you ask me, well, what does it mean for Chassidus? I would say that your hands are what enable you to do anything in the world. The work of your hands, it doesn't matter, you know, you didn't build that, you did build that, whatever. It's your hands, you're doing what you're doing. So it's very easy to fault a guy with hands. That's what the Baal Shem Tov says. So don't wash your hands because the hands, you feel like, I did it, I am, I moved, I. So
that,
therefore,
that means you really should get
well,
them to the flesh, right?
If possible, yes. Certainly not above the flesh of the finger.
Right.
You cut it lower, but not above. So then the aspect of the fingers, they're sort of holding on. They're grasping on to the extremities to try to make a person feel like it's me. I'm the one who's in charge. I do this. I do that. Kochi Dotsim Yodi, like the verse says, it's my strength and power of my hands. What does this mean, the power of my hands? Again, the hands are a very dangerous thing. You think it's me. When I build something, when I did something, it's me. It's not Hashem. Where's Hashem here? I built this car. It's me. I built this house. It's me. I did the same thing with hands, not only your hands. So the extremities, the nails, the way it comes out of the Arizal is it's supposed to protect. It's protection. Nails are a protection. They protect us. So they protect us on the one hand, but on the other hand, if they're too long, it's not so good. He's saying they're not exactly necessary. That's what he says. The extremities, that's where they're holding. That's one way of looking at this beautiful Gro. I don't know if I remember what it says. Tikkun Ezra, I once brought it here, and I forgot, I couldn't find it. Gro in Tikkun Ezra says a lot of powerful things about the nails. What are these? Yeah, here it is. I knew he says about the Ace of, it's not my, I know I'm lying, but it's not my, I didn't make it up, it's here. About the hair, the Ace of. We could say it's the same thing with the nails. It's also wild and unruly. I mean, it's for sure part of things. That's where they get their grasp, because that's the more animalistic part of a prey. Suddenly becomes, what are you doing? So that's also, there is some truth to that too. Like the verse says, let her grow her nails out, you're trying to get the klipas out of her. And it's not of you, why should you be attracted to such a person? What should you do to you? Like, what do you, so you were taken by something, you were in the heart of war, hopefully you overcome it, but if not, there's a bechina where we're hoping it'll get it out slowly. He had whatever test he had. It's not so simple. So again, the nails of the bechina is called the bechina of klipas. The bechina, anything which is not, you know, that's a little drop of what it's about. Like I said, there's a grow which is much stronger, and it's also, you can bring it down to the seichel, but I don't know what it says. I saw it.
Count as anything or just not competent? That's just talking.
Okay, so I'll tell you. Again, there's an easy answer, right? And we same old. No idea, but on a simple, like, the Arizal says hair is dim. So again, one of the reasons is because you haven't really hair. It's like, because Aesop's called the man of hair. But Zohar, like I said, I didn't make it up. It's here. He has a few things. He talks an awful lot about hair in this sieve, in this simon. Tishbav also not to cut, not to cut even for children. And whatever he's talking here about, he talks about during this week, don't cut. So he has a long piece. And before also, he brings, by washing, he also brings about hair. There's a whole lot about different things, different yadim. So he basically says, the Rizal says, I don't know if he mentions this, I don't think so. The Rizal says, okay, so hair is judgment, right? So we leave a little bit of judgment, right? The payas, we leave a little bit, and we get rid of the rest, if possible, at least to be trimmed. There is a bechina like that, there is an advantage to that. Very nice. He says, what about women? He says, no.
Yes.
Yes, but they have to shave their whole hair. Some people say maybe they should. There's a sefer
kana
that
was just a custom in Yerushalayim.
In Yerushalayim, in certain parts of Hungary, not Yerushalayim. Certain parts of Hungary, there's some sofer. He was very pragmatic. He said, "You don't know what's going to happen." And I heard from people like when there's an attraction. I heard it from the slave. She's a married lady, and she had attraction to some man or something. A worker, a storekeeper, something, and she's like, she had the chumrah of shaving her hair. That's what her rub said to do, and that's what she did. So she said the possibility became impossible. And she was Bal Shuva, like wherever she was from, and like she said the possibility became impossible. That's like a great protection, and that's some sofer also. See, it's better to be people. They don't want to cover hair. It's better just to get rid of it. He had his, what he learned from the Gemara. Kimchus didn't show her hair. On the contrary, it sounds like she had hair. Otherwise, it's a big deal. So no, it means. She got rid of it. Again, there are different ways of looking at it. But the Arizal says, that's some sofer, that's an attempt to distance oneself from secular values and falling. This should never be confused, though, with two different things. One, sometimes you have no choice. You work out a way of helping people who are in trouble. But there's also, like, what's brought down? It's brought down, which is that the Arizal says she should have hair. She represents din. Her body, again, is more tied to danger. She represents this bechina of din, of judgment. Putting things together, which also means get like, she can form an embryo and have a baby. It's also a bechina of a lot of constrictions. There's no other way to talk about it. You're constricting and building and doing. It's just part of how her body works, how where she is. So she has that ability. That's where she is, who she is. So she's supposed to have hair. So you could say maybe nails also could be those who have. Maybe you're supposed to. I don't really like it. So bechina is din. So what? It doesn't bother because she is anyway bechina of din. I don't care. The reason doesn't say cut your hair in order that it shouldn't be it shouldn't be a problem for a man, not for a woman. So perhaps one could extrapolate. I have no idea if it's true or not. As one teacher likes to say, if not, you can just open the window and. But it could be. It's a thought. It might be. Maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, actually, yeah, that's a great question, and like I said, it's possible maybe to be melamed tefillos. It's certainly a custom in a lot of places. My wife was telling me in Cedarhurst to walk down the street and you have a coffee shop and like three nail places in a coffee shop and three nail places. Like that's the whole, I guess that's Avenue, but I haven't been there in a long time. But
that's L.A.
There we go. Anyway, so, so in L.A. I would believe it, but this is a very religious neighborhood. I don't know how very religious, but people are religious. They keep the Torah there. They're the good people. So I guess she says everywhere is filled with these Asian ladies doing religious ladies' hair, nails. So that's just the way, what am I supposed to say?
Well, in Burbank, you have a conservative synagogue, and right next to it is a nail place.
Well, Stan was asking because you're adding on. So I'm like envisioning this. All these little things hanging on her body.
I don't know. Yeah, I
hate her arm, hates her toe.
I honestly don't know. I don't know. Okay, but again, it gets.
But are the women? Is it just like for fun? Like art? Don't think anything of it. It doesn't mean anything.
It's probably better not, but I'm not sure.
No, it doesn't mean anything.
I don't
mean because you're talking about cutting.
Could be for her. So it doesn't matter. Like, that's why I said, I'm not sure. Like, let's see, she's growing her nails. It could be, it doesn't matter.
Now, I also saw a person today. I was curious about this. I don't know the answer. I don't even know if this is a question. But I saw a painter painting outside, doing a landscape painting. And I said, now she's really getting a lot of enjoyment out of doing the landscape painting. Mm-hmm. Is that something you should be doing during the 9 days?
Probably not.
And if so, should you be doing it publicly?
Probably not. But if she's Sephardic,
yeah.
Number one, so then
I don't
know. Nothing started. What do you mean the 9 days? The week of Tisha B'Av, which is next week, buddy. Sunday and Monday. What are you talking about? What 9 days? So that's A. Okay. And B, when Efreet took over Dallas, Texas, one of the candles cold there, and people were keeping Shabbos, people were keeping kosher. There were a lot of halachas that sort of fell by the wayside. One of the big halachas fell by the wayside was the oldest 9 days business. It could be the fastest Tisha B'Av, like people who were more religious, or at least they knew they were supposed to. So like all the 9 days halachas, they just weren't doing it at all. So it's like, what do I do? Like, how do I? It's like a gap. They're like, well, we don't know about that. What? Really? You know, you go to work. What are you talking? You don't go to the pool 9 days. What are you talking about? They don't even know what you're talking about. And they're religious people who more or less are on the way. At least Shabbos they know, kosher they know, but this is something they don't even know about. So what should I do? He said, it's good to tell them. He said, but you need to be very careful. Don't give them the feeling that the main thing in Judaism are these halachas. These halachas are very important, but you know, the person doesn't have to feel like he's not keeping Shabbos. That's not true at all. There's a big difference. It's important to know about it. It's good to give them a general, you know, understanding and try to bring them to it, but that's not the main thing at all. It's not like mega, major, major. It is in a way. It is. We should know better. It's not. So it could be, where's this lady coming from? What are her needs? Where is she holding? Sometimes the person needs for therapeutic reasons also is possible. People, they don't know. They do their best. But yeah, in terms of growing her nails, even though it says about the Eishes Yafas Torah that she should grow it out so she should be repulsive, I mean, she didn't beautify them, but if you beautify them, maybe it is, again, like the one religious lady, she went to America, and she's like, well, I come to do my manicure, like, if I have a chance to go, I get a chance now to, you know, so that's not, what are you supposed to say? Well, that's not cool, she's like, there are different levels of sneers, there's different levels.
The immediate question I have is mikvah.
It could be, it's okay. If that's what's normally done, and her nails are done and they're beautified, they're not a chatzitza. It's not something she wants to remove, it's something she wants to keep. So, presumably it's fine. What's the problem? Not the fake nails, yes. Don't add fake nails when you're going to make them, but when you have regular nails, her nails, and this is her nails, these are her nails. The lacquer or whatever should not make a difference, presumably, because that's what she wants. She wants to stay. That's assuming that. That's a place where people, that it's not done or it's not normal or whatever it could be. The minute it is,
again, my wife is an artist and she always has short nails. It's very hard to paint or do any kind of art with long nails.
Well, that's good. I mean, the painting for her, if she's a painter, she probably has materials to remove from her hand whatever paint she gets on. Right, I would assume.
Yeah.
So even if she can't, if she's a painter, it's normal. It could be it's okay. Because she's used to having it in her hand if she can't get rid of it. That's more of a shiloh for painting. So that's the nails.
Now, what about toenails?
What about toenails? Same thing.
Okay.
It's a little easier because toenails, we can't really fix the feet as well. Feet is much harder. To fix your usual hair, Rule of Shemper says, don't say, don't bother, it's hard. It takes a long time. It's not the same thing. You don't have to feel guided. You don't have to feel big about what you do. That's up to your attitude. But to fix what you're used to, that's like that's a heavy burden. I'm like, nah, I'm just going to change it. That's what you think. To really work hard, like it's slow. It's not easy. So the feet is very hard to get rid of the klipas from the feet.
And you, we're talking about, what's it called? You know, the things that attach it to your nails.
Yeah.
The evil spirits. For lack of a better word, evil spirits.
Or arrogance.
Right.
Same thing.
What about your feet?
The feet have a different kind of evil spirit. They weigh you down. And push it.
Right.
Do what you usually do. Not the best things. Just go. Just do it. Just go. Go to bed. Go to this. That's an expression of these bechinas, whatever they are, whatever they mean. I don't know. Don't know. Your cats know. They see. The Gemara says they see.
Oh
so
yes.
I don't know. And what does that mean? I also don't know. I just know that's what the Gemara says.
No, but I could. What they say in the Gemara is mamish.
Yep. said, therefore, don't wait. If a person was, although he was a mourner, so of course, when a person is a mourner, he leaves his nails to grow 30 days because then they have a real strong grasp on him. So you can't really, that's also why maybe you're not allowed to cut, because you're, you're, you got a problem. You can't get rid of the din now. So he said, if it's, you're finished the week of Tisha B'Av, cut your nails. Because here there's some permit, and like Kabbalistic, you're in big trouble. Big trouble. So cut, especially if you show Rishkayim, and anyway, you should cut your nails. That's what he says. That's the Rishkayim chapter.
Dumb question. What if you start the morning period this week?
Can't do anything. 30 days.
Okay.
30 days.
Because then you're tossing in, you're coming right into Tisha B'Av. And
it's a different bechina, the morning. Morning period is very, it's a very, I mean, of course, like, the truth is, you know, we were speaking yesterday, right? Is this really Breslov, right? So the truth is, everything we're learning, though, the mindset presentation for sure is Breslov. Because it's all going to be positive. It's never going to be, because it can be very sharp sometimes. It's always going to be with the positive, hopefully. That's the idea. It's not going to be, it's not going to be presented as harshness. It's not what he means anyway. It's what Nassim said. It's just, harshness, wherever it may be, is meant to wake you up and help you move forward. And if that's not what you do, it's not what the author meant. It's not true. It's not, it's a lie. Hashem values you for you, otherwise you wouldn't be here. What are you doing here? And that means anybody, Jew, non-Jew. Hashem wants you here for whatever reason. You're creating a kind of nachas ruach for him. And otherwise, what do you do?
As they're creating
some pleasure to God. That's what you hear. You have a purpose. Sometimes the pleasure is maybe the villain gets messed up. But there's something. Usually, most of us, we're not such villains. We're doing something, whatever it may be. We haven't attached. That's why we're here. Not for nothing. So in Avelis, in Kol Chayim in Avelis, when he talked about the laws of mourning, he's so heavy and hard. He's really, anyway, for sure, the din there is like, there's a tremendously stupendous weight of judgment, someone who is on mourning. To play with this enough is very not simple. To really be, you know, again, Chassidim, we did certain things we do, which they don't do, like the Chassidim don't do. There are certain big leniencies, just because, you know, Shabbos is Shabbos is Shabbos is Shabbos, so we don't care. We don't play with Shabbos. You wear the regular Shabbos clothing, you do something, you didn't go to the mikvah before Shabbos. It's like an incredible mikvah. You guys are like, oh, he's in the morning, what's going on? Like, it's for sure. It's like not so simple. Like, really, there are leniencies, which is just like, you know, from a halachic standpoint, they're like, but again, Shabbos, you need mikvah, that's what you're looking for. You need this, you need that, you do it. So because there are certain things, nails though not. You can't put them on.
So, if someone dies Friday morning and is buried Friday afternoon, you know, like an hour before Shabbos, then they don't have the mourning period until after Shabbos, right?
They do. No. 2 minutes. It's very important to start. Even 60 seconds. Take off the shoes and sit on the ground or something. Because then that day counts. If they don't do any mourning halachas that day, it doesn't count. You start Sunday. Not Shabbos either, presumably. So you start Sunday. You've got to do a week. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. Shabbos can get up.
So then
but if he starts Friday, he gets up on, I think it's Thursday.
So so like we had the funeral at 3?
Uh-huh.
No, sorry. We were there at 2. We had the burial at 3. Mm-hmm. We were wedding. And then I think everything was done by 4. And Shabbos was at 5:30 or 6.
Even 10 seconds. I don't know who's the buyer you're talking about.
My father-in-law.
I understand. So it's best for, when was this? A while back, probably?
2007.
Yeah, so when a person in that situation, so first of all, you need to know the Gemara says it's a good sign to die Erev Shabbos, actually. It's a good thing. Erev Shabbos is a good time to die.
You know, everyone was saying, oh, wait until Sunday, wait until Sunday.
I said,
no, we got to do it right.
David HaMelech said, let me die Friday. Hashem said, no, Shabbos, one day of Torah is worth it, I don't care. You're a Torah, I want. Shabbos, now for Friday is a big, it's a good time to die.
So we had the Hebrew Kedisha up there, it's better than anyone else, and I actually helped out with the Tahara.
Well, sure. But
it was quote crazy, if you know what I mean, but it's like we did everything right.
But you have the way it works is as long as a person kept the shiva for any way that day, it's a day. If not, it's not, it's zero. It didn't even start. It doesn't, you can't start shiva, it didn't do anything.
No, we had both rabbis there, and so they really, I just told them, no bending rules.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yes, they told us exactly what to do.
Excellent. I'll show you a bit of right. A little of this amount. And then that's enough. Then prepare for Shabbos. But otherwise, generally speaking, it's not, it doesn't count for the week. It needs to start later. The Shabbos probably also doesn't count what the person is doing. So then it didn't start the fire. Shem Shmor. So when he talks about the chassidus in the Torah on Avelis, the Halachas, he talks about it's hard to call it chassidus because he was 200 years before the Rosh Hashanah or something, so it's hard to call it chassidus, but whatever he's talking about, the avoda, whatever you mean, the meaning, the deeper meaning, a little bit deeper meaning of these Halachas, based on the Zohar, he is so fire, it's like really very, very strong. So it's not Avelis, the person's in not a great place, not in a good place.
So how does he change, what's the difference between him, the Baal Shem Tov and Rabbi Nachman?
Well, it's like this. The Rizal was presenting Kabbalah. He presented the meaning of the Zohar. The problem, though, is the Vilna Gaon explains that the Rizal gave really a parable. He didn't tell you what it means. The Ramchal actually says there's three levels of knowing Kabbalah. To level number one, you know everything. You can dot every I, cross every T, but you don't know what it's for. He said, you're like a parrot. You know, the Holy Time, all the books. You're a parrot. You're just parroting off what it says. You don't understand its function or what it means. What does it mean to me? Well, nothing much. It's just a high light, which I can just repeat what it says. So you have nothing, zero. That's the Brahma. So there's another level. You know, this is a way to reveal God's oneness in the world. I don't know how, but somehow this learning this reveals God's oneness in the world. So you already won those. There's another level of understanding each thing, how it reveals God's oneness in the world. So that's the complete level. That's the highest level. Knowing how each thing that he says reveals God, the godliness in the world, reveals God's oneness in the world. That's the highest level. That's what we call this. So the result is the Baal Shem Tov in the dream, the bringing this precious learn. The result came to him. She said, "What did you do? You revealed this high stuff, and no one knows what you're talking about." She said, "I only had 18 months. You can finish. I had 18 months. I had to bring at least the body. Then we have to explain it. You'll explain it." So that was the result. It was very, very beautiful. That's what he was doing. Now, there are certain great people who did whatever groundbreaking work they did, like the Shlach HaKadosh, Nechos HaBrish. There were different, the Haredim, the Ramchal, the Maharal. There were different great works that really explained a lot of deep, deep stuff in all sorts of things everywhere. And they were, each one was doing his own thing, explaining whatever he was explaining. Except for the Maharal, presumably, all the rest are based on the Rizal. Ramchal certainly. The Maharal was around the same time as the Rizal. I don't think he had any books of the Rizal. I think he had the Zohar, but he didn't have the best of the Zohar. So there are certain similarities in the Maharal and the Rizal, but he's doing his own thing, whatever it is, explaining the mode of each thing. So the Maharal and other great earlier commentators, they were each bringing a different illumination, a different thing that they were bringing. Now, some of the Kabbalists do somewhat explain the Avodah, if you can understand what they're saying. So the Makor Chaim, first of all, it's very heavy in Zohar. Like, he's got everything he says, he brings you 10 lines of Zohar. And what that means is, so that's one point. The Chida is another one who is also a contemporary around the Baal Shem Tov also, who is very, very great, a lot of Avodah things, a lot of things down the Maisa. So what happened was, the Makor Chaim, for example, wrote a tremendous volume explaining a little bit the avoda of the halacha. Now, he did it in a Kabbalah way. He never brings the Rizal, but he did it from a Kabbalah perspective, which means he brings a lot of Zohar. He sometimes has two different approaches. The second approach will be completely, like, much higher. It's not so easy to bring down what he's saying to you and me and understand what he's doing. You say, okay, what does it have to do with me? It's a very interesting idea. It has nothing to do with me. But the Baal Shem Tov had a different, like totally different pathway of revealing the Ari, how he relates to even a simple Joe. I don't care if you can read this book or not. God relates to you too. Everyone. You're Jewish, God relates to you. Even non-Jew, but certainly Jew. Non-Jew, he had his own, I don't know how he brought non-Jews closer. He would say a religious non-Jew is much better than a non-religious. Otherwise, you have no scruples. That was what he was. But So that's what he was doing. So he was doing something completely different. He was trying to bring Hashem in Emunah and the belief and the ability to understand that God is wants a personal relationship with me to every person. I don't care what you know, I don't care how learned you are or not. A person being holy or connecting to God is not the realm only of somebody who this person is very learned. He said, that's incorrect. That's how people felt. It's not true. If you're not learned, well, you're just like a, you know, never. I'm not a never. I'm a Jew, and I can connect to Hashem as I am, who I am, whatever I know, whatever I don't know. Even right now, right here. If I have things together, I have understanding, I'm sincere and do my best. That's what the Baal Shem Tov was trying to bring in very, very much. And also that you have to realize Emunah, you have to really work on Emunah being alive, being real, being genuine. That's a big Baal Shem Tov concept. And in a lot of ways, this comes out in a lot of ways, and there are many schools of thought. The Rabbi Nachman came for a totally different reason, and he also is doing many, many things. But the bottom line of Rabbi Nachman is that whoever you are, whatever you may have done, I can help you come back to a spiritual transition. Whatever. And if you, as usual, Rabbi Nelson said, if people knew what Rabbi Nachman is saying, they would not have gone, the reform movement would never have started. People really, they started these movements, that's what he said. This is because of a lot of, you know, they felt, what does it mean to me? Because I should be giving up on living a real religious life. So there's like a stira.
Wasn't he in contact with Mendelssohn?
Or not, but I never heard this.
Or is it, because I remember he was saying something about, someone was saying about, you know, he talked to him and he convinced him to keep something like Shabbos or something, or one of the holidays.
I don't know. I don't think. There were certain Maskilim he was in contact with and helping. There were people who were reformers and he was helping. Yes, that's true. But he came to take a person from the gutter who's trapped in who knows what, who knows where, who's very, very imperfect and messed up, who can't relate to the Baal Shem Tov. You can teach the Baal Shem Tov, it's not going to really help him much. And so there are certain essentials that will slowly help this person too. And he's very, very messed up. It doesn't matter. And he can help. That's what Rabbi Nachman is coming to do. He can reach the lowest place in the world. So that's Kesed. Kesed means the light is so high, it's so powerful, he can shine into the lowest place in the world. That's what he's trying to do. That's Rabbi Nachman. That was Rabbi Nachman's purpose. Now, once we have the Baal Shem Tov, and especially Rabbi Nachman and Rabbi Nosson, so I can take a Mekor Chaim, who can talk very esoteric, and he can say something that gives you a glimmer, but he's not really telling you exactly what it means. He's just giving you a glimmer. And with the tools from the Likutei HaLachot and Rabbi Nachman and the Baal Shem Tov and different other works, you start to be able to give over what he's saying in a way that's going to be relevant to other people. Otherwise, you read the book. I mean, it wasn't that much print in this book. It's a very powerful book. It's a lot of Kabbalah. It's a lot of Zohar. Sometimes he's very terse. You don't know what he means. Sometimes he's saying it's just not clear. With the introduction, then you do understand. That's one of the big purposes of the Likutei HaLachot in general, at least how I was taught. The Likutei HaLachot was the Rav Nosson's seminal work. What it's trying to give over to us is a realization and a deep awareness that everything is one. That Rav Nosson talks about, let's say, 20 topics in a beautiful way, strings together in one lesson, let's say. So it wasn't that those 20 topics have a special relationship that nothing else has. That's not true. Very often it was that those 20 topics were just on his mind, that's what he was holding on a level. This came, and this happened, that happened, so that all came together. That's what he was holding. If he'd been holding somewhere else and something else had happened, that would also go into a lesson. Rabbi Nachman also, something happened, he put, oh, the person is very, very ill, his lung hurts him. We'll talk about lung disease, and Torah, and he'll get better.
Master prayer, with the prayer leader's missing, or no, torn jacket, kafkin.
Mm-hmm. What about it?
As an example.
You mean when he told people to use torn clothing if they needed torn clothing and fixed clothing when they needed fixed clothing? That's the part you mean? What part?
No. When he was introducing the story of the Master of Prayer, his Baal Tefila had a torn jacket or kafkin.
So I don't understand the relationship, therefore.
Anyway, he was using that as
yes.
As an
perfect
introduction.
Perfect, correct. Correct, yes. He came in also told. We see things that are even like much... Manasseh's wife wasn't well. She was by the Rebbe. And he told her about what bothered his wife. So the Rebbe put it in the lesson. And she got better. Another person had a lung disease. Got better. The Baditchever passed away. Nobody knew. He put it in the lesson. he's the Perador, and he started talking about the crown of the duration splendor. He talked about the splendor duration of the Tzaddik, and when the Tzaddik dies, and there's fires, and shortly after there were fires. Like, he was putting things in, but yes, you're right, that is an example. There were examples where, like, you saw that everything was one. But with Rav Nosson, he gives you enough tools so that you put everything together and you understand how to put things in a way that's illuminating and positive. Because the Torah, he brings the Gemara, tells us that the Torah has two powers. We have an elixir of life and a portion of death. And it's our choice. If we have to be Zohar, you see the good. If not, you feel like you're in a machine gun, and that's not so good. So he's there. Rav Nachman gives you the elixir of life. And that's really what it comes down to. So you learn this from. I really want very much to give over the Makor Chaim. We have time. We're in Benish Chaim now. Benish Chaim does not discuss Avelis as far as I remember. But he's not in, as far as I recall. But so if we learn it with Makor Chaim, it won't be harsh. It's harsh for what it is, but it's not harsh. Is not going to help us so much. People want a big level harsh help. Gives them a push. Do it. You see how serious this is? This is like, wow. You know what that is? A bracha without kavana. How could you make a bracha without kavana? But if you're just struggling to try to, you're just going, like, it's not going to help me. I'm not there at all. Look, like, kavana. Let me try to remember that Hashem is one. And, you know, maybe I'll make one good bracha. Like, it's a big fight. It's like, you have to know what's going to work. What's not going to work. It's not going to work. There's no point. It's not bracha what Hashem wants. He doesn't want you to kill yourself and feel like you're under the gun, and then you'll be bracha slowly. Without any heart, because you feel like you're dying. That's not what it's about. It's like slowly pressing myself again. The feet, I can't, the change of feet is very hard. Fixing the feet is very hard. The lower knees, the getting ready to fly, what to do, where to go, how to go. It's not so easy. Can't move, can't get anywhere. So, at least I don't have to feel diabo when I'm moving. That's the hands. Oh, I'm doing it. He's like, really? You know, that's not, you know. The guys we can deal with, the feet is only Erev Shabbos, we have a chiv to wash the feet. That's what Ramak says. Erev Shabbos, because then you can fix the feet. Otherwise, it's very hard to fix the feet. Every day, you have to wash the hands and the face. Not the feet.
You know, I used to really like often phrase today to help someone. So, I was amazed at the power of the phrase. You know, and I knew I didn't even get away. It wasn't even close. It was the idea, you know, that I was really trying to get. I met this person in the light rail. She was very depressed. She was telling me how depressed she is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know where I want to be. I forget how old she is. And I have children. And everything makes me unhappy. And I am so unhappy. And I don't know what I want to be. I don't want to be unhappy. I said, well, what would happiness look like to you? And that's what you want to be. Go for it. And I said, the fact that you want to be happy means there's less unhappiness than for you. Just wanting it. Yeah. Bring it about.
Sure.
You know, and she like, I said, that's the beauty of wrestling, just wanting it. Brings it about. And you have to yearn for those two things, yearning and wanting together, and you drive it in the stuff away.
Ah, beautiful. Oi.
But you know, it really makes, as you said with the Reform movement, I mean, it makes things that look so impossible much easier. It kind of takes the pressure off.
Absolutely. That's what Rav Nosson says. He says the Reform movement is because people were giving up. They gave up, said, I messed up already, I'm never going to get anyway. So what's the difference what I do? What's the difference who I marry? Like, who cares? It's too late. I already blew it as a Jew, so I may as well do whatever. Why not do whatever? No, don't do whatever. You didn't blow anything. You messed up things. Okay, you can fix them. That's what people, they don't believe. If you really believe, it could not fall so much. How do you fall so much? When you have the chance, when you're, okay, right, so you had your bottle of wine, you had whatever you did, this, you did that, then it's over at a certain point. You're like, you wake up in the morning, then what? So you try to do what you can and try to fix things. Or you say, well, it's too late.
Another concept of falling too much. Oh, my brother, I can't get up. Uh-huh. Just keep falling.
Yep.
It's the original Torah.
Yep.
That's Adam and Eve.
That's right.
We have to make a take on it.
We're working on it. But that's what the Rebbe said. He said, if you really know the truth, you'll never give up. You just don't know. You just lied to. Like Adam also. It's a perfect example. That's the Medrash. The Medrash says, you just had to say, sorry, I really messed up. And everything goes back to reset. It's all fine. It's okay. I forgive you. That's all. He didn't know. Couldn't say sorry. She didn't. What's up? Sheesh.
I'm probably going to mess this up from memory. I'm doing this from memory from reading something. There was a Rav or a Rebbe that was in the Holocaust camps. He lost his wife and 11 children. And he kept on being positive and singing and dancing. And the Nazis couldn't get rid of him. And then he remarried and had, I don't know how many children after the war. And just being positive and happy.
Might have been the Klausenberger, I don't know.
Yeah, really was.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
If he was, someone saw the Klausenberger son. He said, I was with your father, of blessed memory, in the camps. And I know why the Holocaust happened. You what? Yes. He kept repeating the same phrase over and over, and that's why. It says in the verse, Tacha, because you weren't happy with all the good you had, that's why this is happening to Zamalev. It's coming to you. He talked to himself. Zamalev, it's coming to you. You know, in Hungary, Kusei Yehuda, they call in Yiddish Zamalev. Yehuda's Leib, more or less. Zaman is Yekusiel, I guess. It's another name for Shlomo Melech, I guess. Exhaloyia, so that's what. So he kept doing the. He said, pick the stone up the hill, roll it down, and bring it back up. He said he would do it quickly, and that's what he said the whole time. It's coming to you. You weren't happy. You weren't happy when you had everything. Now it's coming to you. See, I know why it happened. You know, Zavoda. Every person came into the camp. He had a little amuna. He said, "This off Hashem is here." No, understand. But everything he held everything. Come on.
He said that the Holocaust wouldn't happen if people were simply happy, or something like that. I'm totally trying to do this from memory.
I don't know how it's presented.
Rob Blazer Brody gave a shiur 2 weeks ago or last week or whatever, and talking about that.
That's what he said. Correct. That's what he kept saying. Me'achutz. That's why it's happening. He didn't fulfill this verse. That's the verse. He said it's not simple that it's permitted to comb your hair during the week of Tisha B'Av, actually.
I'm sorry, what was that?
He says some people prohibit combing one's hair on the week of Tisha B'Av. Women, it's okay. Men, it's not so simple. Some say when it's in privacy, it's okay. Not outside. Not publicly. In the privacy, do it. I think the custom is supposed to do it. I think people do it. He holds it's prohibited. Better not. But the Benish Chai. He wrote a lot of other books. Someone complains to my uncle. I don't know, he writes these simple svarim. He said, why don't you read his work, what he wrote on the Tikkun Zohar? He wrote on the hardest part of the Zohar. He really did. He wrote a lot. He wrote maybe a couple of dozen works. He wrote a lot. We have a whole bunch of books from him. He's no slouch. He's a homie. He wrote two sets on the entire Talmud, especially the stories in the Gemara. What does it mean? How does this mean? Very, very beautiful, very powerful stuff. He made a shul in Beit Shittur. He came to Israel, he made a shul here. Shoshana David, it's his, he made a shul here. And Baruch Hashem, they.
They're
still here, they're there, they're doing well, they learn Kabbalah, they learn Halacha, they're holding strong. It's Friday, obviously. No, but he was very, Rav Kaduri gave his drasha, the bar mitzvah drasha, so he told him, you have to speak, you know too much, you have to just be quiet, not let people know, not let on, not let people know until you're older. You know too much, we're so young. No, they were looking at you. That's what he said. Every Jew, is connected to multitudes and endless worlds. Endless worlds, connected to endless worlds. So the Rebbe says, when you move your payah, you look things around, worlds are moving. It's not that you're connected, you're picking them all up. That's what the Rebbe explains. So, you know, it's the same thing. First of all, on a simple level, right? You want to comb your hair, you want things to be organized and good, and here we're not organized, not good, it's tissue, blah, 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 blah. That's all good. That's on just a simple, simple level. But on a deeper level, you know, everything makes a difference. Again, a lot of people do. The custom is to comb one's hair. But it makes a difference. How I comb my hair, how I move, what I do, what makes a difference? We have to at least know about it. If we're not holding by remembering it, focusing on it, at least we have to know. The Daughter of Kelm says, he says, you look at a person and you say, can you serve God really, truly 15 minutes a day, an hour a day? So he'll say, well, yeah, of course. I mean, he said, but then a minute it starts to be like, well, do a nice Shabbos. Try to make brachas at least here at 10 seconds, 5 seconds, connect, reconnect throughout your day. And it becomes so hard and so heavy. It's like such a fight. Why are you fighting? What happened?
Isn't this called a Sitra?
Yes, of course. But we don't realize how hard it is until we're, you know, that, you know, when I comb my hair, I'm like, when I'm just, you know, brushing my teeth, what am I doing? I'm preparing myself for Hashem, I'm connected to Hashem, I'm getting rid of all the garbage and filth the other side, going around.
Isn't the analogy like a video game in which you have levels, and then the higher you get up, the harder it is?
For sure. It's definitely the higher you get up, the higher person is, the more Yitzhar is strong, the more powerful Yitzhar is. Side. That's for sure true. You have to, like, a little time to realize that, you know, there's like a dichotomy. Like with breasting, it's a little easier. As you do this photos, hopefully you're a little more self-aware of where you really are and where I really am. Where am I? Well, I have a long way to go. I have a lot of pluses. I have a lot of things that you worked on. You know where you're holding. But if you don't do this photos, or if your photos is not so well focused, so you start to think that you're somewhere that you're not. I think I'm really, that's not where I am at all. I'm wherever I am, but not there. I have this crazy idea and it's not true. It's not where I am. And the more we try to focus on remembering Hashem, even the mundane things, the more we see how much I need to work, how far I have to go. The Pizetna said 24 hours of serving God on your level, my level, who I am, where I am, one real day, it's easier to learn years with diligence than one day. Anyone, whoever you are, it's just hard to keep in mind and focus and work. And it's a different kind of avodah. You're changing your inside. Wait, what are these thoughts about? I have to think about Hashem. You're just on my level. So I need to take a break. Fine, but if I don't need it, it just takes me here, it takes me there, I need this, I need that, I need this, and that, and that thing, and I'm just not remembering Hashem. It's just too easy. It's too easy to forget. It's very easy. Huh?
That made Moshe Rabbeinu very special.
He sure was. Yeah, everything he remembered Hashem. Even at Tamid of Valshemtiv, even like much closer to us, there were people who were just on fire to such a degree. Every movement was with Hashem. Every movement. The Kamarna also brings, he said, one time I was going to shul with my talis and tefillin. I forgot about Hashem for a second and I heard a heavenly voice say, look who forgot Hashem. Look who's. So I took out my pipe to take a smoke. Oh, you remember Hashem. Again, then they didn't know smoking was unhealthy, whatever. I don't want to get involved today of the issues. But the Maisa bottom line is, when you're thinking of Hashem, you're revealing great things. If you're not, well, then you're revealing that. Like, what do you do? What are you doing then? It's not such a great, not so great. It's a buyout. Big. Thank you. So that's the you know, that's the sin. Okay. So the custom is not to eat meat or drink wine during the week when Tisha B'Av comes in. Some do from Rosh Chodesh, that's us. Even from the 17th of Tammuz, most people don't do that. In Baghdad, the custom is from the second day of until the night of the 10th.
Yeah, does that exclude Shabbos?
Yeah, that excludes Shabbos. Shabbos is an obligation to eat meat. As a matter of fact, there's even a Be'er Hativ who visits how his few rules. We do not hold this way. Don't get confused. Don't do this at home. But the Be'er Hativ says when you make food for Shabbos, it's so filled with holiness, you can eat that during 9 days.
What?
When you make food on Shabbos, when you make chalms, if you have extra chalms, because it was ready for Shabbos, you can eat that food on 9 days. It's not cold meat. It's meat from Shabbos. It's like a chiddush. So we don't hold this way, but it's definitely elevated and higher. It's not just some food. It's great. It's a great thing. My son is 8, almost 9. Yeah. So remember, Rav Nachman says about the meat, he says, during Tisha B'Av, you start to realize that we have very far to go. He says, you know, the Gemara tells us that ignoramus should not eat meat. There's special sparks to pick up, which is not there. When I'm holding there, we can't do it. So he says, we start to understand that we have very far to go. We have to really, you know, it's going to be Rosh Hashanah, it's going to be all these great times. And even now, too, we want to push a little bit more. A little bit more to change. A little bit more. Maybe this time, it'll work. Maybe this time. That was the beginning. Like you said, a new beginning, starting again, yearning, wanting. All these things that I can do, I have to really renew myself. Because I'm really, I have like a very far way to go. I have a very long way to go. So that's one reason why we don't eat meat. Because we're reminded that the Mamish, we're not where we're supposed to be. We're compared to who we're supposed to be with, like, ignoramuses. And really, if compared to the time of the Gemara, it says a person on Chacham would fall in any way. You don't have to even rebuke him. He for sure did tshuva by the next day. Unfortunately, as Rafutu points out, and many, the Talos of Yaakov Yosef, the Baal Shem Tov seminal student, says the same thing. He says, today, unfortunately, you can have a guy who knows the whole Shas, and he'll make a certain sin. He says, he won't necessarily, you don't know for sure he's going to do tshuva. You just don't feel that way. Either he will or he won't. Satmar Rav quipped. He said that, you know, this is a person who does a sin and he repeats it. Right? Vishana, Nasis Loi, Keheter. This is Vishana. This is Keheter. It becomes permitted. How does it become permitted? It's a sin. It says, if it's permitted. So, Satmar Rav, the word Shana also means from the word Mishnah, which means to review. And it means he's learned it. Someone who's learned it did a sin. He'll find a way to show you that it's a mitzvah. He thinks it's okay, no problem. He'll find it some sort of rationalization, which sounds very scholarly, but it's phony baloney. And he would also say that, you know, there's a halachic rule that something, if you drop in 60 times its volume, generally speaking, it doesn't give a taste and it's nullified. You're allowed to eat the dish, felon. You have to remove the thing if you can find it, but you're allowed to eat the dish, felon. He said, "Bottle b'shishim in America these days, unfortunately, means you give the rabbi $60, and he declares the food kosher." He said, "That is not what bottle b'shishim really means. That's just these not real, these fake people who don't care about kosher. They just want money. That's not a real authority. That's unfortunately we're holding a place where we're not really connected. We're not really the beginning of the Talmud Chacham the way we're supposed to be at all." And now's the time to remember it, to work on that. That's just remembering. Just do one more, I guess. Finish. Maybe. Yeah. The custom is not to wash one's body entirely from Chodesh, even in cold or lukewarm water. person who always goes to mikvah on Erev Shabbos can go to the mikvah Erev Shabbos Chazon this week, and you can wash your hands, feet, and face in hot water on Erev Shabbos. Person who does this every Erev Shabbos. A person who needs to wash because of health reasons is allowed to wash. Like a woman who gave birth who needs to wash, she can use also hot water. Or if she's expecting, she needs to wash in order to make it easier for her. She's allowed to. Also, if the doctor told you have to wash, after relations, a person allowed to immerse. Sandik is going to preside the priest is allowed to immerse. Yeah, so the person who had a problem, even Erev Tisha B'Av, it's okay for a person or a person with his wife, he's allowed to immerse. Tisha B'Av itself is a problem. And it's not that the relations aren't from there anyway on Tisha B'Av, but Tisha B'Av is
prompted. Can
we cannot, no. Definitely not. That's what I said. Yeah. There's no relation. A person has a mission, Chas V'Shalom, so he can't go to mikvah on Tisha B'Av.
Unless they're reformed Jew.
No, actually, the Ar Chasidic source that say you're not going for pleasure. No, there is place for leniency, but ask someone who's like really holding. That's what the Piscitula says. He says, I can't permit this. He says, I can't say no, permits it, and you need to talk to somebody who's really holding. And he doesn't mean rabbi, he means like a posik. I understand. I'm just saying, there actually is such a thing. But Erev Tisha B'Av, even if you go to mikvah, like I said, Chassidim, they go to mikvah every day, they go also during this time. If that's what you do. Showering Erev Shabbos Chazon is complicated. Again, many Chassidic poskim come out that like you need to wash your whole body in the hot water, that Rizal has a whole, what are you doing? You're not going to bring, you're just throwing out the creepers, whatever you're doing, so that you should do. They take a warm shower. Maybe not very hot, but there are those who prepare for Shabbos, they do just do regular. Soap, the Rosh Hashulchan says you're going to pay in the next world. They're using soap during this time. When you soap, maybe wash, so fiery. Others argue that there is this, not so simple. Again, if you say, well, if I wash without soap, I feel like I haven't washed at all. So maybe there's a place for leniency on that way, on that ground as well. You can have to use the wash when he needs. He's washing it, and the whole week he hasn't taken a shower, at least now. Maybe there's such a thing. There are those who admit, because I would maybe check into it. Others are you. So wash. So he says, he talks about in Hilchos Avelos, washing or not washing. As Nassim says, the idea of washing is, you're removing filth. One of the things he says is removing filth, throwing out, he differentiates. It's Mekor Chaim, really, in Tisha B'Av. He says there's a difference between removing filth, which is permitted anytime. If the person gets filthy, he's allowed to wash that off. And just washing just for the pleasure, so the washing for the pleasure, is not proper now. We're all soiled, unfortunately. That's what we're holding. So filth, though, is the other side. So filth is really the other person has a hard time focusing. You're very, very filthy. So that already you're allowed to. If the person gets mud on himself, you can wash that off for sure. Even on Tisha B'Av, and certainly during this time. The Moshe actually says that in America, he says many people are very fastidious and they take a shower every day. Could be that it's okay for them to do so. That's what you need. You feel like you're not a I feel like I'm not a human being if I don't take a shower. So could be you can't. Soap is more complicated unless you need it. Better not to, or better minimal. But that's what you hold on. So this is last sit for what I wrote.
In Baltimore, the rabbi said, he's particularly rules listed in terms of the seven or eight major rules of two, no sex, leather, and then he said, he talked about washing, one of these rules, and he said, now I tell you, there are leniencies in those practices. He says, every one of us is different. He said, so call me. And talk about your case.
Good. Sounds great. He says, Yosef Omid says, I saw some people didn't buy wood after Tisha B'Av, after Rosh Chodesh Av until Tisha B'Av. My people are lenient in this regard now.
What would be the significance of not buying wood?
Boiling water.
Thank you. You're right.
He said they used to have the Atzim Aracha. They no longer could bring the wood that they put on the pyre on the Mizbeach, on the altar. So they used to gather it. There were things that they used to do, and they couldn't deal with it. That's then. It's a reminder. We don't have the Beis Hamikdash. That's basically what it is. So it's a custom. It's not Aracha that it has to be. He said, listen, people who are leaning, you don't have to stop them. It's proper to not to buy wood, whether it's for building or for heating, from Rosh Chodesh until Tisha B'Av. But to buy a little wood, like different shoch, whatever this little, I guess it means like twigs or something, which is not so big logs or big, I guess maybe logs, like little things, just for heating water, for example. Maybe he says that seems to be, he says that's okay. He's like big stuff for heating or for building. That's what he's talking about. That's more what he means, I think. That's what he's saying. We don't have a base of meters, that's what it comes down to. Hard to connect to the Eitz Chaim, basically. It's hard to connect to Eitz Chaim. We want to connect to the Tree of Life, we want to connect to the Torah in a real way, a genuine way, and it's not so easy this time. Not so easy. So we're trying to remember. That's maybe one idea of what's why not buy wood. Again, it's a custom. Some people do, some people don't.
And it's conflict. You think of the temples on fire. And I think of the temple's on fire, and I think of, we were such an incredible people back then.
Uh-huh.
Well, we started, and we messed it up. I don't know what we were doing, we messed it up, but yet we're still good. And the messing up caused destruction, but the fact that we're such a great people, we're here today.
That's
to look at and talk about it.
That's true.
So we have this,
that's totally
give
true,
and take, or conflict, or back and forth, I'm not sure what to call it, but,
it's possible also to remember in terms of the Atzei Maracha, that was like our part of things. The fire burned with or without the wood. We had to put the wood on because we were doing our part. And it's not by accident, like wood is very simple. It's a simple thing. It's not complex. We put the wood on, and it still was miraculous. It's an incredible miracle. So when we start to realize that, like Rav Nosson says something very interesting. He says, we made a big mistake because we're such an exceptional people. We said, Hashem gave us the Beis Hamikdash, He revealed to us all His miracles. He's not going to take it away. We'll beat these guys, no problem. They attack us, we'll wipe them. No problem, it's going to work out. Hashem's going to take care of us. And taking things for granted, he says, that was the only way it could have been destroyed. They were right, except you can't take it for granted. You have to appreciate it, you have to be amazed by it. You can't say, oh, well, yeah, of course, it'll be okay. What do you mean? You can't take this for granted. But that was the only way they could destroy it. So it's simple, like that. Again, we don't buy wood. Where's our part? Our little part, which wasn't necessary. We had to remember, your part isn't necessary. You just have to appreciate and stand in awe, though. You can't just take it for granted. Say, oh, it's my back pocket. It's no problem. That was the only way it could be destroyed. But there's miracles that we didn't have any rights to. So we have to understand and realize Hashem's given us this incredible gift. It's not our right. It's not ours because we deserve it. It's because He's kind and good. It has nothing to do with us. That's a very important thing to pay attention to be aware of. We have miracles. We have to know it's Hashem helping us out. But it's not coming to me. It's not in my back pocket. It's just your kindness. It's not me. It's not us. It's not us. So if you want to give me an email, maybe I'll send you the rest of it. I did write the rest of the Benish Chai on Tisha B'Av. I wrote a couple of years ago. I don't know. 3 years ago. If you want, I'd be happy to send it out. I'm probably not going to teach it. It's probably no time. I want to do the laws of speech on Shabbos tomorrow.
I'm just wondering.